reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Kathleen Shea for the appellant, Travis Reif. We're here today asking the court to reverse because the police searched Mr. Reif's backpack without any lawful authority, and the trial court wrongly denied Mr. Reif's motions to suppress the contents of the backpack and the statements Mr. Reif made to the police. Under Article 1, Section 7, warrantless searches are per se unconstitutional unless the state proves that one of the few carefully drawn and jealously guarded exceptions to the warrant requirement applies. One of those exceptions is a search incident to arrest. This exception involves two analytically distinct concepts, as Byrd discussed at length. First, that a search may be made within the area of the control of the individual. This type of search is justified only by an articulable concern that the officer must make that identifies that the individual would have otherwise been able to access a weapon or destroy evidence. The second kind of search is a search of the person, which is what the state attempted to use here to justify the search of Mr. Reif.
Aren't we bound by Brock?
I don't think so, no. This court is not bound by Byrd, McDickin, or Brock because the circumstances here were very different. In Brock, the court's concern had to do with the fact that the backpack was not immediately associated with the individual at the time of the Terry stop versus the arrest. Brock was looking at a timeline, but in that case, the individual was actually wearing the backpack when he was stopped by police. That's not the case here.
But doesn't the court draw almost a bright line that if it's going to the jail, if it's going to be transferred to the jailhouse with the defendant, it's searchable?
No, I think that that is the problem with potentially expanding this exception much further than the Supreme Court, I think, has anticipated. While some of the language is vague, I think the Supreme Court still remains clear in Byrd, McDickin, and Brock that's not the bright line rule. That in fact, the courts have to look at whether is this item immediately associated with the individual and is it a personal effect? And I think that's why the two different components of the search incident to arrest come into play, because you've got both the fact that this effect can be part of the person, and then it is a search of the person themselves, and we're talking about then about things that really are then just to the person's body, their pockets, a purse, a backpack that they are wearing or holding. And that is what the court has found. A rolling suitcase, which was also in the individual's hand. So again, that contact with that item, that personal effect that is immediately associated with the body.
Do you have any authority for that in any court that says that it has to be in actual physical contact with the body?
I don't think the court has said that specifically, but I think that in making determinations about these cases, the facts have always shown that that is true. When the Supreme Court has looked at this, they've always been...
why should that be the case? I mean, maybe those are the facts, but... Why should that create the rule?
Well, I think that's important because when we're talking about this, we're talking about the search of the person.
Okay,
I mean,
let's say the rolling suitcase was not in contact with the person's hand, but was within 2 inches. Close enough?
I think then we're starting to get into a problematic area, which we have covered by these two analytically distinct concepts under the search incident to arrest.
But maybe we're not, because the problem, the slippery slope is the problem that we might slide all the way back to the rule that you can search an automobile incident to arrest. And that was what a number of recent cases were designed to get away from. Of course, an automobile doesn't go in the patrol car to the jail. Doesn't it seem to you that the Supreme Court in Brock developed that bright line rule in order to, have a rule that could be easily analyzed without thinking about inches?
No, I don't think that the concern is
is entirely based on whether or not this item is going to the jail with the defendant. I mean, for one thing, the police officers admitted here that these items were not going to go to the jail with the defendant. They said that during the hearing.
What were they going to do, leave it on the street?
Well, there were two options. One, they could have called someone. Mr. Reif could have been given the opportunity to have someone pick up his things, including the wheelchair and the backpack. And two, they admitted that, in fact, they knew it would not travel to the jail with him and that it was going to go to the evidence room at the police department. So that's where they were taking it. The officer also...
How was it going to go? Was it going to go with them in the patrol car, or was somebody else going to come by and pick it up?
I don't know if it was specifically stated. I think the implication at the hearing was that they were going to transport it. They may have even talked about collapsing the wheelchair down. So that is my recollection.
So it's not really a matter of going to the jail. The question is this something that we can leave parked next to the sidewalk?
Well, first, not necessarily, because he could have been given the opportunity to have someone pick it up. And second of all, even if it's being transported in the car...
Well, that's always true, isn't it? I mean, it would be true of a rolling suitcase. It would be true of a backpack. It would be true of a wallet.
Officer,
could you just wait a minute? I'm going to call my brother, and he's going to come and get this.
Well, I think that's true, which is why it's so concerning to get beyond the person, the body of the person. As you move out, we're talking about the second, framework here for this exception, which is within reach. And while there's testimony that this backpack wasn't even within reach in this case, if we're talking about an officer who wants to search items for safety that are not actually attached to the person, they have that ability if they're able to articulate a reason for it. I mean, that's what Byrd is saying, that there are these two distinct concepts. And so when we're talking about whether or not you want to search something within reach, an officer can do that. He simply has to, or she simply has to, identify what is the safety reason. What weapon is going to be possibly taken here, or what evidence will be destroyed? That should be simple enough to do. And I'll reserve my room. Thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Kathleen Weber for the State, and I apologize, I have a bit of a cold this morning. The question before the Court today is the scope of the search of the person incident to arrest exception to the warrant requirement. And the Court initially asked defense counsel if this question wasn't governed by Brock. Didn't Brock create a bright line rule? And the defense said no. I would quote to the Court in State versus Brock at 184 Washington 2nd at page 158. The Court says, put simply, personal items that will go to jail with the arrestee are considered in the arrestee's possession and are within the scope of the officer's authority to search. I would suggest to the Court the question really isn't so much where it's going, jail or property room, because the jail won't accept large items as in this case, but the fact of the matter is items that are going to be going with the arrestee that the officer is taking possession of, and I think that's the point that Brock was making, are part of those within the scope of that search of the person incident to arrest exception to the warrant requirement.
What about the argument that Mr. Reif had a friend there to take his backpack and wheelchair with him?
I think that argument was rejected in Byrd. That was the argument made by the dissent in Byrd, that the officer could have delayed the search. And the majority of the court said that misses the point, that the point is that these create a security issue for the officer and for the public, that is the sole justification. It is presumed, it's inherent in the search of the person incident to arrest exception to the warrant requirement, and the question of whether or not a delay could have occurred does not answer the question of whether or not it's within the scope of the exception. And so I think that whole line...
Safety isn't the sole justification for the search incident to arrest.
No, it's evidence preservation as well, but I think under these circumstances, in this particular case, the officer was pretty clear when he was asking the defendant, is there anything in here that's going to poke me? Because the officer, you know, the reality of it is the officer can't leave this stuff out on the street, because He doesn't know whether or not it contains anything that's dangerous, a gun or a weapon or illegal substances that an average citizen might stumble across. So he's got to take it someplace. This is 3:30 in the morning. You've got a guy who's essentially transient out there in a wheelchair out on Highway 99. He's got to do something with this stuff, and he's got to secure it. And he's got to make sure that it's safe to be secured, wherever it is secured. And that's the justification for the search of the person incident to arrest exception. This is a little bit unusual. This isn't like the situation in Byrd. Now, I think what Byrd was talking about is if Ms. Byrd's purse had been in the back seat or the trunk or something like that, it would have fallen outside of the exception of search of the person incident to arrest exception. It would have been more within the scope of the Gantt exception, which is, you know, within their lunge zone or within their ability to reach zone, and which was not the issue that was exception that was at issue in that case. This case is a little bit different because there really is no other place for Mr. Reif to have put his stuff. I mean, he's basically carrying, like a turtle, carrying his house on his back, carrying all of his worldly possessions with him at the time. And that means that essentially virtually...
What if he had a car? Could he have asked the officers to just put it in the trunk and lock the trunk?
And I think that goes back to the dissent in Byrd, the officer's opportunity to allow the defendant to do that does not advise whether or not the officer had authority to search those items incident to arrest. I think given that people generally understand that when people are in wheelchairs, they're not necessarily going to be holding their worldly possessions. They're going to be hanging them on their wheelchair. I mean, I think people often see people in wheelchairs who do put their purses or their briefcases or whatever on their chair. It's no different than any other device used to help a disabled person carry their items. It's no different, I suppose, than, you know, maybe an elderly woman who's using a shopping cart as a walker to go down the shopping aisles and sticks her purse in the little top basket part of the shopping cart. It's still closely associated with her person, and I think that's the language of Byrd that we need to focus on, is it's not that it has to be physically in contact with the body, but it has to be so closely associated with that person that that it is, in effect, within that person's actual possession.
What if they can't reach it? What if Mr. Reif were a quadriplegic and couldn't reach his backpack? It had been put on there in the morning by a caretaker.
Okay. Well, I don't think that really makes a difference, and I think that that's the Byrd exception as well, because at some point, I mean, it is closely associated with him. It's on the item that he uses for his mobility. The wheelchair was more important to him than his shoes in his circumstances, because without it, he wasn't going anywhere. I mean, it virtually was part of him, and the court has said, you know, items that are worn or carried by a person are part of the person subject to the search incident to the search of the person incident to arrest exception. So the fact that he couldn't just immediately reach around and grab into it doesn't make any difference under these circumstances. The fact is that it was part of his person. It was articles closely associated with his body at the time that he was arrested. So I think under the circumstances, the court did not err in finding that.
Could I ask you a different question?
Sure.
You mentioned the conversation between the defendant and the officer, where the officer asked him, is there anything in there that's going to stick me?
Mm-hmm.
And that was that's part of the argument that that it was interrogation in a sense that was taking place before Miranda mm-hmm. warnings were given. I think the state's position is that no, it wasn't designed to elicit incriminating statements. But
yeah,
it's not really a sustainable argument, is it? I mean, would he have been asking it other than to find out if there was drug paraphernalia inside that backpack?
No, I don't think that was the testimony at all. The officer testified, you know, keep in mind, too, this was a new officer who had just gotten out of the academy, and so he's following the protocol. He doesn't necessarily understand
reasons for the protocol, but he's following.
Well, I mean, I don't think that's going to play into a Miranda analysis, whether it's no, but
it's helpful to understanding the facts of this case. And you know, the officer specifically said, I needed to find out if there was a knife or a blade or a needle that was going to injure me when I was searching this backpack. This is what I've been trained to do. I was trained to secure the scene before giving Miranda. And it does fall within the officer safety exception to the warrant. This is distinguishable from the Elkhorn case, because in the Elkhorn case, the officer didn't limit it to things that might injure the officer. The officer generally stated, is there anything I need to worry about here? And that's the distinction that the Elkhorn case made. In fact, it specifically said the officer didn't limit it to things that related to the officer's safety. It was more general. And I think that's the major distinction in this case, is that the officer did limit it to things that were specific to his personal safety in searching that backpack. So I don't think
the word stick doesn't suggest needles necessarily then in your analysis.
I'm sorry, doesn't.
Well, I mean, I guess when I saw that, is there anything in your backpack that might hurt me? Is there anything sharp? That would be somewhat more general. Mm-hmm. But when somebody says, is there anything in there that's going to stick me? The image that comes into my mind, particularly in view of the circumstances, is there a drug paraphernalia? Are there needles in there?
Well, certainly it could bring that to mind, but sticking, you can also stick somebody with a knife. I mean, you know, and certainly that was what the officer's testimony was, and that was what was going through his mind at the time. It was reasonable for the court to accept the officer's testimony. You know, even if the court doesn't agree that those statements should have been admitted, you know, quite frankly, the overwhelming evidence, even without those particular statements, was that the defendant was in possession of drug paraphernalia.
I understand that argument. I was just curious what your take was on the stick.
No, I really think that stick somebody is broad enough to include any sharp object, whether it's a needle or a knife or a blade or any other kind of something that might cut you, so, or poke you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd ask the court to affirm the conviction. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I guess first I just want to address the fact that, point out to the court that in the record, the police officer himself says he was searching for evidence when he went into that backpack. So on cross-examination, he admits to that. So it's not clear, as the state suggests, that this was simply a safety issue. He was looking for evidence after he had located the pipe on Mr. Reif's body. And then as to this suggestion that, you know, I think the state...
What did he say? What did the officer testify? Do you recall exactly what he said about
it? I would...
No, that's right.
Really quick. It's almost my fingertips. I'm sorry. He specifically, when defense counsel presses him and he says, you were looking for evidence, in response, the officer says yes. And then talks about the fact that, you know, they are, of course, looking for evidence in these cases. But he says yes directly to the officer's question, or excuse me, to defense counsel's question. And then in addition to this idea that I agree with the state that I think things would have been differently in Byrd if the purse had been in the back seat of the car. And I'd suggest to this court that, in fact, that's the type of situation we have here. This is not where the backpack was on his lap or on his body. Having it in the back of his wheelchair was similar to as if it had been in the back of the car in Byrd. And I think that is the important distinction here. And when the state is trying to use words like closely associated, that's not what the case law says. The case law says immediately associated. And I think that distinction is important because we're talking about an exception that has to do with searching the person and personal effects on the person that are immediately associated with them.
Don't you think the state's analogy to shoes is a pretty good one? I mean, a purse, you can get around without one, but in his case, it was intimately associated with this person because otherwise he wouldn't have mobility.
Well, the backpack was not what gave him mobility. The wheelchair was.
So, I mean, that is, again, then attenuated, and, there's no evidence that he had to be assisted to the car, but it doesn't discuss anyone having to lift him up and carry him to the car. He had trouble getting around because he had had these strokes, unfortunately, which is also what prevented him from reaching around and being able to access the backpack and the wheelchair. But I don't think it's clear that he needed to actually, that was his only way to get around, and I'm not even sure. It doesn't even appear that it went to the jail with him when they're talking about the fact that everything had to be transported to the police department instead. But certainly in either event, we're talking about the backpack here, not the wheelchair, and it was not on him. So I think in that case, and when we're talking about Brock and the state is quoting for Brock, I just want to also point out that Brock also talks about the fact that there was no place for Brock to safely store his backpack, and that wasn't shown here. We'd ask the court to reverse.
Thank you.
Thank you.